If you enjoy interdisciplinary, you should check out Healwell's new show, The Rub, a podcast about massage therapy. You can click the link in the show notes or find The Rub wherever you listen to podcasts. See you there.
Welcome to Massage Therapy Without Borders. I'm one of your hosts, Cal Cates. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely and talented Kathy Ryan. And today we have an incredible guest with us, Dr. Donelda Gowan, who we're actually going to let introduce herself. If you're Canadian, if you don't know who this person is, you might want to push that rock off of yourself and check out the scene. I think in America, you're not as well known to us. So I'm really excited to share you with our US audience and to have you tell us a little bit about yourself today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It is truly a pleasure to be able to talk with you today and to take this time to connect together. And I will say I have had the great pleasure of working with the Massage Therapy Foundation over the time of my career. And so I have great respect for our American colleagues. And so I really do appreciate your podcast, the work that you're doing, and thanks for reaching out. So sure, I will introduce myself. I have a diploma from the Canadian College of Massage and Hydrotherapy in Sutton, Ontario. I graduated from that school in 1986, and that launched me into an incredible now 34-year career as a massage therapist here in Canada. I hold a Bachelor of Arts Honours degree in psychology and a Master of Science degree in community health and epidemiology, and I have a doctorate in population health sciences, all from the University of Saskatchewan. And I am the Associate Director for the Center for Integrative Medicine at the Department of Community Health and Epidemiology in the College of Medicine here at the University of Saskatchewan. And I hold an adjunct professor appointment there. I'm also the research chair for the Board of Directors of the Massage Therapists Association of Saskatchewan, and I am the chair-elect of the Canadian Interdisciplinary Complementary and Alternative Medicine Research Network, INCAM for short. I know that's a long moniker. So those are the three main roles that I bring to the table here today. I'm a health services researcher. My main research interests are massage therapy, of course, pain, integrative medicine, and interprofessional collaboration, and I'm very keen on knowledge translation or transfer as well.
Excellent.
Yes, Kevin.
Thank you. And thank you. I mean, truly, it can't be said enough. Thank you for the gift of your time and wisdom. And, you know, as we were talking about before we started today, just the commitment to pursue the level of education and involvement that you have really is about serving the greater good. And I feel like it's so important to have people who have studied the things that you've studied, population health and interdisciplinary collaboration and things, through the lens of massage therapy. You know, I feel like so much of what we try to do is we take people who don't fully understand what massage therapy is, and we try to bring them on board and to bring their knowledge and their wisdom about whatever it is that they study into our world. And I think there's certainly value in that, but there's something particularly valuable about coming to the table, having touched thousands of people in the way that massage therapists touch them, and really being able to understand how massage can be part of these bigger institutions. And I think massage is so often understood as a service industry in the United States, at least, that we're not looking at what health looks like in a broad scheme, and sort of how, even though, you know, the healthcare industry, it kind of has a bad rap, certainly in the US, that there are a lot of people within healthcare looking at how do we promote health and how do we look at this in a bigger way. And I feel like the types of study you've done in terms of actual research, but also an academic study, really will help us unpack those and make yours a voice that we can look to understand where should we spend our finite energy in how to move things forward.
Yeah, well, and that's a great endeavor, isn't it?
Indeed. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. It's and what an interesting time, I will say. What a fascinating time to be a massage therapist and an epidemiologist, applying knowledge that I wish I never had to apply.
Right.
In terms of this pandemic situation, but also you bring up some really important points about population health and how we need to have a particular lens where we can look at health and health care and health services and the health of individuals versus the health of populations. And I would agree with you. I think it's a bit of a missing piece in our history and in our scholarly development. And so, yeah, I'm happy to contribute. That's why I took on the task of graduate school. I'm very upfront about that. I took it on because I wanted to contribute more. A mentor, Kathy Ryan, will know my dear mentor Trish Dryden from Toronto, Canada. Encouraged me at my in my attendance at my very first research symposium. She said, "Go get the formal education and contribute to this field."
Thank you. I sort of ran, and that was suggested to me. So I appreciate that you ran toward it instead of away from it. So we've gathered you here today to see if we can get, maybe a little bit less theoretical about the opportunity that is presented to us in our sort of the requirement that we stand down right now. And I feel like, you know, we have a couple of large tasks within that. And one of them, of course, is a lot of us are not working. I wish I could say all of us are not working, but I know there are some people who are still, out there seeing clients. And that's another issue that we've already tried to tackle. But we're not working, but we're not settling. We're very busy in our not working. And, I know as at HealWell, we've been creating online courses and really trying to transition our live content into online so people can access it. And, you know, we're seeing interest, but I think what we're seeing is, like you said, just sort of like this glut of, oh my gosh, there's so much out there. I'm going to bookmark this. I'm going to get back to this later. And sort of like, you know, we know this is going to last a while, whether that means months, a year, there will be a period where we will go back to some level of work. And so how do we right now, what can we do with this time to be productive so that like when the train is ready to leave the station again, more people are on it and more people have the same map about where we're going and sort of what do you see as the, what can we do with this time in a like concrete-ish way?
We'll be right back. Do you want to change the world? So do we. Join HealWell this September in Arlington, Virginia, when we host the Event to Remember. There will be classes and conversations. There will be old friends and new ones. And yes, there will be dancing. Come to HealWell Homecoming and let's keep this ball rolling.
Okay. Well, I certainly have, you know, as everybody else is, I think, given that some thought. And, I certainly am happy to give you my input as to what I think, you know, would be a valuable use of this pause. Kathy and I talked about it as a plot twist. This is sort of a fascinating plot twist in the story of the field of massage therapy in the Western world and what do we do with this pause. And so I'm happy to provide that input, but before I do that, I might just sort of share, you know, just kind of for fun, some of the things that I've been doing. And it is exactly as you said, you know, we're in this situation where we're experiencing almost this embarrassment of riches, where we have, you know, a little bit of time and we've got brilliant people around the world producing materials for our consumption. And and I'm aware that we have to be a little bit careful with that, that, you know, that we pace ourselves so that, you know, we're not burning ourselves out in our time of pause. But I wanted to tell you that I am taking this opportunity to do all kinds of learning, and I want to say also that I'm not diminishing. I don't want to in any way diminish, you know, the angst and the anxiety and the hardship that people are feeling, because I'm very, you know, I'm very aware and I want to be respectful about that. But I'm having a bit of a blast with all of this learning that is coming my way, and some of it is completely unrelated to the field of massage therapy, but I'm going to argue that all of our learning and all of our personal development and all of our work that we do to nourish our minds are going to be valuable when we come out of this for our work as massage therapists and as researchers and as educators. So I have been engaged in all kinds of fun learning. I've been working on Spanish. I picked up my guitar again. I've got a putting practice mat in my living room. I'm working on my golf.
Yeah.
So I think it is an opportunity for all of us. I hope to, you know, to be able to give ourselves an opportunity to, you know, take some deep breaths and both quiet our mind. Oh, I'm doing meditation on YouTube with John Vervecki from the University of Toronto. It's brilliant. I'm working out like a fiend. I've got online training with my dear niece in Ontario, who's an RMT and a trainer as well. I'm doing boot camp on FaceTime Live. I've got Zoom meetings with a personal trainer here. I am going to be jacked by the end of this pandemic. But I'm sharing that because this is an opportunity, no kidding, to, you know, take some deep breaths and try to gain some insight from all of these weird contradictions that this pandemic is bringing to us. And you know, this is an opportunity, if I can use the analogy of the traffic circle. You know, this field, we may be on a traffic circle, and I'm going to say that I think in my decades of experience here, we've spent a lot of time just going in a circle, not actually driving on a traffic circle, where I reminded Kathy, like, there are exit points. There's places
right.
You can get off.
You can get off, right. And, no, this is more of a hamster wheel. You're just trapped in it.
Yeah, no, I think we need to be done with the hamster wheel. I think we need to use the analogy of a traffic circle and think, okay, where do we want to go? So thank you for those questions, because I think this is what I'm going to do with my time. I'm going to reflect, and I'm going to build, and I'm going to hopefully contribute more. And I was thinking about the contradictions, because again, it's this, you know, this epidemiological lens on things that is just so weird. So the first kind of contradiction that I've been musing about is that here we are at a time where there is ongoing and increased suffering in the world, and massage therapy is not an available option,
right?
Because it isn't safe,
right?
And how peculiar that as a field we have paid so very little attention to safety. And we have argued against our own power by failing to respect harm that can be done. And now we're living in an experience where safety is front and center in the most obvious way.
Yeah.
So that's something that, and the topic of my doctoral work was exploring safety issues in massage therapy, and Kathy Ryan and her group in British Columbia were instrumental in contributing to that work, and I'm so grateful for that. And I'm going to take this time where we're in a period of slowdown here to submit some papers for publication. So there needs to be some rubber meets the road time for me in contributing that as well. But there's a contradiction that we're dealing with, and what a funny time. The second sort of related contradiction that you know I'd love to discuss with you and with others who are thinking about these things. We're at a time where in our history we're more evidence-based. We utilize science scholarship in this field better than ever, and yet we've created so much confusion and unnecessary complexity in trying to understand our value and understand our contribution. And we need to take this time in this pause to think about how we're going to extricate ourselves from that situation, if I'm correct that's what we've created. You know, we've built our education system, we've built our subsequent practice, we built even our regulation and our legislations around, you know, a premise of, okay, our value lies in, okay, we've got this condition, massage therapy produces this effect. You know, we use, as Kathy and I've talked about, we use very poor language. You know, we're talking about effects and conditions because that's, you know, that's what we have in our grasp. You know, we talk about, you know, boosting the immune system, and our language belies any subsequent claims that we really have a good grasp of what we're talking about.
I think you just said so many things there that are really important, and that you know, I feel like one of my struggles in all of this, and I was simultaneously I swelled with pride and felt deeply disheartened when I was looking at papers that you had written and participated with. And there was a paper that I was reading very excitedly. And somehow in looking up all of the papers, I had thought that this was a more recent paper, but it was a paper from like 2006, where you were talking about steps forward. And I was like, oh, we're still talking about these steps, right? And so I'm really curious, I want to simplify that last thing you said in particular, because I think that, and maybe the way to do it is, you guys were talking about this a bit before we got on. Talk to me about, like, what do you mean by unnecessary complexity? I think I know what you mean, but I want you to tell us, like, sort of, why is it unnecessary? How do we make it less complex?
Yeah, well, I think that it's maybe time for us to just get in this slowdown time to get some really thoughtful scholarship going about massage therapy. So I have three ideas about that. Shall I lay them on you?
Please.
Can you see me clapping?
Yes, indeed.
Do it.
Okay. Well, the first thing relates back to you know, my little story about how I'm filling my days with all of this learning and development. So, I think what we can do and this goes honestly to reducing the complexity. I hope so. I think we can take this time to focus on some thoughtful self-care and self-actualization, and then apply those personal leadership principles to our field, to our leadership of the field, but also to the practice. And so, you know, I have to tell you, I've been reading Heal Well material, and one of the things that jumped right out is your idea about self-awareness in caregiving. So I'm not kidding when I say that, you know, all of these things, this, you know, learning a new language, this, you know, working out, this meditating, I actually, you know, I'm taking time for self-care where I'm doing, you know, all of the things that I've resisted. You know, I'm on the floor, you know, stretching and, you know, doing all of these things, taking this time. So there's a self-awareness component there. And that's one of the things that I think that we need to do. I'm going to suggest from the literature on mindfulness that quietude in its own right reduces complexity. So maybe we need to take some time to get quiet and to become introspective and use our interoception to create some insights. And I think in and of itself, that training the mind should help to reduce some of the complexity. So that's sort of the on the individual level. But I also will say, you know, collectively, I think we can invite ourselves. I'm watching my own language. I took part in just this brilliant discussion on well, it was polyvagal theory, and I asked the expert about, you know, the should language, and she was encouraging us to get out of the language of what we should do, and instead our nervous systems appreciate it more if we invite ourselves to explore
yes.
the possibility of, and I so appreciated that lesson. So I'm not going to say what we should or shouldn't do, because
don't shit on us.
You know, and this no shooting. And you know, and the thing is too, I will apologize for any time in the past where, you know, where we've done things, you know, from a research perspective or a leadership perspective in any way that, you know, that has been perceived as sort of, you know, aggressive. And that's, you know, we have to change the flavor of that as well. So I'm going to say I'm inviting myself and all of you colleagues and peers and friends and you know, all of the people that are engaged in the field, that we can take this opportunity to think really hard about the scholarship, about the, you know, the frameworks, the theories, the models. And this is where we have to, you know, get a bit serious about operationalizing and defining key concepts and making this our foundation. And we're poised at a position in our history where we can do that, you know. Yeah. And you're kind to recognize that, you know, there are those of us who have, you know, done some of the formal training work, where we can now start to contribute to the field. So I wanted to say that this the second part of that in the scholarship piece that I think we can invite ourselves to take this time to engage in. I have this idea around exploring integrative massage therapy. So I mentioned in my introduction that I'm the associate director for the Center for Integrative Medicine. And I wonder if we need to, or we might think about exploring how massage therapy can integrate itself sort of in three ways. So we have this idea of integrating massage therapy into, you know, the current dominant healthcare system. And I know that's something that Healwell is working at and excelling at. But also, I'd be interested in having a conversation about how we integrate what's good
yes.
from the dominant system into massage therapy. And you've already spoken about it, interprofessional learning, research. How do we integrate the best of the scholarship, you know, and not just what's known, but ways of knowing? You know, this is our opportunity to utilize ways of knowing from other systems of knowledge. We have access now to understanding a wide body of knowledge from other disciplines, other fields, other philosophies. So I think this is a really good opportunity to start to do just that, do the heavy lifting, have these conversations. So those are my two main ideas. Can I charge on with my third, and then we can?
Yeah, I think so. Kathy, are you willing to concede the floor to Dr. Gowan?
Always.
All right. Excellent.
Okay. And then I want your input. So here's my third idea of what we can utilize this pause for. I think we can utilize this pause to bring some humanity back to massage therapy. And so this is where we may be in fact going in a circle, but in a good circle. Maybe this is where we're circling back. And so listen, I've been reading Healwell stuff, and this is all the stuff that Healwell is talking about.
Right.
So you talk about, you know, with your community, you talk about contributing positively to the human experience with and without illness. You talk about fostering excellence in massage therapy's role in the future and how humans will care for humans. And you talk about bringing more ease and comfort into the experience of illness. skilled hands easing pain and anxiety, creating a better day through more peace and less pain, you know, changing the human experience. So there's a whole untapped area for massage therapy and pain management. So one of my areas of interest in research is pain science. And I listen at interdisciplinary conferences to all these other fields talk about managing procedural pain, managing transitional pain. And of course, I'm wiggling in my seat thinking, okay, this is an area of untapped contribution for massage therapy. But that's another topic and perhaps a topic for another day. But this idea, and again, I'm coming back to Healwell and what you've been saying, mobilizing hearts and mobilizing minds. So this is where there's an opportunity to bring some humanity back to what we do, which I am pretty stoked that this also relates to reducing the complexity. Making things simple, more simple, by bringing back some of this aspect of what is the true value that we provide here. And I think that's a piece that we've missed. And you know, I want to say too, like all of those sort of three ideas that I have about, you know, bringing humanity back to massage therapy, and you know, exploring integrative massage therapy, and looking at, you know, how does self-care and self-actualization, how do we use, you know, this pause to contribute positively? In my mind, those things are all interrelated. So if I give you an example, you know, from medicine, there's a drive in research to understand how being skilled in self-compassion, how that relates to increasing empathy, which then relates to providing better care, which then provides to better patient outcomes. So I think that's quite an interesting piece that might be missing. All of these ideas, I'm hoping, relate together. And Kathy and I have talked about, you know, we've got the skilled touch. Nobody would argue otherwise. It's something that we've curated and developed beautifully. And maybe now we can invite ourselves to think about some skilled thought and some skilled talk.
Yay. To all of that.
Yes.
You know, Pam and I kind of touched on this in the last episode about how when Pam and I were part of the project group updating the interjurisdictional competencies for our national education and training platform, that when I looked at what we were talking about, it occurred to me that really nothing much had changed since I went to massage therapy school in the 80s. So I think part of our circle has been, and you know, I've heard people kind of bristle about, we don't want to lose our history. Massage therapy has been around for a really long time. And, you know, and I think this speaks to the skilled touch piece. And when I'm asked what's one of the most important things that I do, me being a self-proclaimed science nerd, I say, just be present. Be present with the patient. It starts right there, you know, regardless of all the science, usually fascial, that I yammer on about, but it's just being present. But I think one of the things that we really need to do as a profession is we've got to modernize. And I think Donalda identified those pieces. We've got to modernize our thinking and our talk. And that doesn't mean that we completely scrap our history or all that is valuable in our education and training, you know, that we've identified as our national competencies. It's not what we're saying, but we've got to modernize. And I think this pandemic situation has brought us to a place where this potentially could be the catalyst for that, that we really start to think about. Because when Donalda and I spoke about a week ago, you know, and her phrase was an interesting plot twist. Could any of us have imagined, you know, we could have imagined a pandemic, but one that stops the hands cold, and one where the hands that, you know, we envision ourselves as helpful and healing, potentially being lethal. I mean, I don't think any of us could have really envisioned that.
Yeah. it is an interesting time to direct the story too then, right? Remember that book, the Choose Your Own Adventure? Do you remember
yeah.
that? From,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is where we get to use this plot twist.
Right. Well, and I think it's really interesting because for us in so many of the courses we offer, we bang our heads on the wall sort of, you know, philosophically about how do we stop you from doing so that you can just be. And the universe was like, oh, hey, I have an idea. How about a global pandemic? And that, you know, when you talk about, I feel like this is one of the places where, you know, I think there are different cultural, there's a different cultural ethos in Canada than there is in the States in some ways. But at the end of the day, we're all humans. And when you guys talk about this idea of don't forget our history, it takes me back even to something that Danelda said earlier about sort of the quietude reducing the complexity and sort of, you know, you were speaking individually, but I think one of the struggles we have here is that when we're talking about don't forget about the history, it's don't forget about me, person who's been here for 30, 40, 50 years, who wrote blah, blah paper in, you know, 1972 that nobody remembers. And I personally want to be remembered for my contribution and that, you know, we've seen some things happen in the profession here in the States that, you know, 10 or so years ago, two of our regulatory agencies, one sort of, I feel like, emerged as like, oh, wait, so our job is public safety. We are going to be in charge of the state exam that makes it able for you to practice. And that had been a large revenue stream. This other exam had been a large revenue stream for one of our other regulatory agencies. And I think the profession panicked. And I think the organizations and sort of the collective ego of each organization responded to what felt like a threat. And instead of sort of just taking a beat and saying, okay, something big just happened. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for the profession? This one organization is now really coming into its mission and saying, wait, basic licensing is about public safety. It's not about elevating the practice. We're actually in our lane doing what we need to do. And we're freeing up this organization that was started to elevate the profession and set a higher standard to do that. There was such concern about staying solvent and staying relevant that there wasn't a pause. There was just an immediate panic about how do we create revenue? How do we show that we're important to the profession? And I think it became distracting and almost like, you know, we were cruising through the traffic circle in first gear and suddenly we put it into third gear and it's like, oh, we can't even get off the exit because we're going too fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not willing as leaders and as organizations to say either the time of this organization has passed or the previous work of this organization was valuable at the time, but now it needs to pivot. There's just not an ability as a profession or as the organizations within it to say, okay, what's needed? How do we best use our energy? And it's not about work that went before not being important or valued. It's really about staying, keeping your eyes on the ball.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think even in the, you know, sort of quasi political realm, we can, I think I can apply my, you know, three sort of thought points to how we can, you know, make some positive movement in that regard too, because, you know, when I hear you sort of speak about the recent past and present circumstances, I mean, I think we're all aware that in our rich history, we have, you know, we have a number of traditions that have brought us to where we are here. And I absolutely have respect for those traditions. You know, in Canada, we have very much a European-driven educational background, right? So we have, you know, the traditions from manual medicine, I guess, for lack of a better word, and the hydrotherapy and the gymnastics is what, you know, sort of the remedial exercise. That'll make some sense to Kathy, I think, from our from our long ago curriculum in massage college. But then, you know, I'm also, you know, very respectful, you know, in the States, there was, you know, very much this influence of the human potential movement and the fact that we have, you know, brilliant philosophers trying to understand health and well-being and how we apply that to health services and healthcare. So I would suggest that we can, you know, we can take those three points, this idea of, you know, how does self-care and self-actualization apply to our current predicament and problems, and how does, you know, an integrative massage therapy, how does that, you know, help to, you know, take the best from both worlds, and how do we get back to that humanity where we have respect and a willingness to do what I think you're describing, is to, you know, lay aside some of the unnecessary polarizations and, you know, dismantle some of those unnecessary silos. And in interprofessional education, and I'm sure you're aware, the catchphrase is learning with, from, and about one another. Yeah. And so I would like to see that, you know, within massage therapy, this could be an opportunity to, and a time where we do embrace that. And for me, that's part of the full circle too in my own career, you know, and I apologize also, you know, for any of my former selves that have been, you could at times be a very, you know, very black and white and, you know, potentially dogmatic. I don't know that I've ever been too dogmatic. I'm a bit too much of a rebel for that. But, so I would say, you know, we're at a period of time in our evolution where we can even shed our own former selves. And
yes. Yeah, well, and I think, I mean, we're sort of laughing, and I think I know that part of my laughing is because I one of my deepest hopes for this podcast is that it invites massage therapists to have these conversations, and that, you know, the stuff we need, the knowable stuff, exists. Yeah. Our problem and our inability to implement some of these ideas that we have are really about this self-awareness piece and about sort of like making sure that recognition lands in the right place and that the, you know, power is in the right hands. And there's sort of like, I mean, I feel like part of the invitation you're offering in this particular episode is that, like, don't do anything quite yet, or at least not to change the profession. Like in this exact moment, and maybe this moment is a week or a month, or like, just let the spin slow down. And see when you can achieve some level of stillness, what needs to be done. You know, I feel like there's almost a panic right now. Like, oh my God, we have this amazing opportunity. Let's seize it. And we're just squeezing it till it can't breathe. Right. And, you know, what happens if we really do go play the guitar and draw pictures and meditate and sort of like, you know, we're all worried about how we're going to pay our bills, and that sort of low-grade panic certainly adds to the ongoing sort of sense of, you know, feeling frenetic inside. But that we, what if we really just like turned the machine off for a little bit, and sort of when we go to turn it back on, we turn it on engine by engine and sort of say, oh, do we need this still? Does this still work? Why this thing exists because this other thing doesn't really work. If we just take out this other piece, do we still need this piece? And I think that, you know, maybe a deconstruction is almost, you know, what we might find we need.
Well, yeah, oh, I love that idea, and I think that's a really nice encapsulation of that idea of allowing insight to occur, and I think Kathy had the exit point. You know, Kathy, you mentioned about, you know, modernizing, and so yes, absolutely. So when the insight has, you know, has been coming to me in the quiet time and in the quiet adventure time, then that ability or that you know, direction of modernizing. So we have all those things that you've talked about. So this, you know, bring the just being present. You talked about that, Kathy, and Cal, you talked about, you know, sort of just being. So, you know, the principles in scholarship, as you know, are, you know, therapeutic alliance, all of the aspects that are currently being studied in other professions. So and what they've done is integrate thoughts from other philosophies, from other movements, from other traditional knowledge systems. Yeah. And we have that opportunity now too, and I think we are doing that. But I liked what you said, Kathy, about modernizing it. So I'll take it one step further and say we've got to nerd it up.
Yeah, it's nerd it up. Oh, definitely. What does that look like, you nerd bags? What would it look like to nerd it up?
Oh my! I'm just going to jump in really quickly. You know, I think one of the points that you made, for me, I think is one of a really important exit point, and that is that collaboration is, you know, goes in both directions. Yes. I think part of our issue as a profession has been is we've kind of prided ourselves on being separatist. Mm. And I think part of it might tie into, Cal, you had mentioned the last time about our lack of self-confidence or self-esteem, you know, part of our professional identity piece. So I think part of it is that if we want to have interprofessional interaction, we've got to be willing to listen to other people's perspective. Yeah. And how can we take the best of what they got and incorporate it into what we do, and not just trying to take this is what we do and shove it down people's throats.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, Donelda, that piece about the collaboration going both ways, I think that is a very important exit point for us to consider.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll add that the contradiction there to me is that this is a time where we have to be bold and humble.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're not antithetical.
No.
I think this is part of our struggle, is that we take these very nuanced concepts and we make them concrete, and that there, yeah, that there can be real power in boldness that's based on humility. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah. And that boldness can be asking the questions.
Yes.
And not being, because I think, I mean, I'm always asking the questions and getting the Heisman, you know, and sort of, it's the choice to sort of peek around the hand to be like, no, for real, what do you think about this thing? And how do we, yes, it is a hard problem. That's why I'm asking the question. And that boldness can actually be, you know, persistence and kindness and sort of, you know, an unwillingness to be deterred from really asking the hard questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And I think we're quick to build, I don't know if this is a Canadian thing too, but we love a task force in the States. You know, we see a problem, we get the smart people in a room and we say, fix it, write a paper, tell us what to do. And I feel like one of the things that hasn't worked, we have had the smartest people. I mean, I looked at the people who collaborated on the paper that that I was reading earlier today. And I mean, these are people who are the voices. These are people who have experience, who are open. But as a profession, we're really talking about a willingness to undertake a paradigm shift and a willingness to move from doing to being. And noticing our unconscious bias about mainstream healthcare and mainstream healthcare providers, and sort of, I think what you're saying, Kathy, like, it's really, you know, we say, well, one of the best ways to sort of learn things that you didn't get in massage school but that will really help you is to sit in on a physical therapy class, you know, audit a nursing class about physiology or anatomy, and you know, therapists will say to us, well, you know, I don't want to learn it the way they learn it. It's the body. What you're going to learn is the knowable stuff. You know, I mean, certainly you'll get it maybe from the nursing perspective, but sort of what are your stories about nurses, or what are your stories about doctors or PTs or whoever it might be that are making you inaccessible, that new information can't get in because you are crossing your arms energetically about that exposure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that, that offers an interesting, well, be an interesting research question. You know, what are the characteristics of the context in which that's all been successfully weeded out? You know, I think it does exist. You know, I was kind of grinning to myself when Kathy said, you know, we sort of pride ourselves or historically have had some pride in our, you know, our, as you know, in our separatist ways. And yeah, and sometimes in some contexts, we've done an appallingly good job at that. but there are also. However, I will say, as the optimist that I am, there are also contexts where that has been weeded out, where we our contributions are valued. And so in terms of moving forward, I think, you know, what we need to do is we need to, you know, put in the forefront the cases and the thought where things are working well. Mm. And to do so in a respectful manner too. And I mean, you know, we joke around about some of the you know, issues and problems, but you know, we are, as massage therapists, we are, you know, we are, most of us are heart driven. You know, we really do. We you know, we care about people, and we, you know, we I think are hopefully thoughtful about our actions and our words and our thoughts and how they contribute. But I think that we, you know, we need to maybe be applying some of those things, you know, to ourselves and to our field. You know, I had a conversation once with a Buddhist monk, and it was just such an amazing opportunity. It was when I was a graduate student, and you know, this fellow was, there was a small group of us invited to have a conversation with him. And so I said to him, I said, you know, I have always found that after experience of massage therapy, after, you know, having massage therapy, that truly, you know, the world just seems like a kinder, more gentle place.
Yeah.
And you know, he had got this, you know, rather, you know, beatific smile on his face. I don't know whether they train for that beatific smile. Yeah, right. I don't know how that, you know, how exactly that happens, but I'm assuming that's the natural consequence of that inner quietude that the rest of us are trying to seek in this pause. And of course, everybody else in the room, you know, looked at me like I had three heads.
Right, right.
So we can use this time to do as you've suggested to Cal, to just be a little bit quiet, allow the insights to materialize, and then contribute. And one thing I will say is that we do have some amazing contributions already. So how do we go about applying these things? So, you know, we have individuals that are producing amazing work for the field, and of course, knowledge translation and evidence-based practice is one of my areas, and we're not alone in any way in our research knowledge gap. So, you know, yeah, we have to appreciate that this is not a unique thing to massage therapists. It's across the board, and it's not even unique to healthcare. All fields struggle with the application of new knowledge. So creating new knowledge is hard enough in and of itself, but applying new knowledge is incredibly difficult. But massage therapists are no worse at it than anybody else. It's very, very challenging to shake up our beliefs, but we've got an opportunity to do that now, and maybe that piece about you know, self-reflection would allow us to, you know, just give ourselves permission to not only think more expansively, but also to use what's already been created. you know, we do have some terrific work. I, you know, I was thinking about framework and models and theories, and I see that you've been talking to ABK and Blair Kennedy, and you know, there's some work that has been already created. Let's start to use that.
Yeah, and I think Kel made that very important point. And sadly, the task force concept is not exclusive to the U.S. That exists here in Canada too, yeah, in a big way, and certainly in our profession. You know, so I think one of the things that maybe we can really do during this pause is really look at, okay, what are the actions? What are the first most critical actions we need to take in order to start to really actualize this change, to really, we've got great information out there. How do we now take that information and really put it into our educational system to really start to actually take the steps to start this process? So maybe one of the things we need to think about within our profession is, who are the organizations that need to get behind this in order to drive this train forward?
Yeah, and I think how do we invite the organizations in a way that is not about, I want to say that I spearheaded this, that sort of, you know, that your voice is important among the voices. And I think, you know, one of the questions that came up while you were talking as well, Kathy, is sort of, it occurred to me this morning as I got yet another email from a small business support organization. We're having a webinar today to tell you how to understand the legislation around, and it's like none of these organizations are talking to each other. They all want to be the one who gave you the best information, and instead of saying, how do we just create the best information together? Because I think about, we're having this conversation and I wonder where else, like I connected this week with Nikki Monk and you mentioned Anne Blair Kennedy, and I've reached out to a couple of other people that I feel like think about this stuff. We're all thinking about it, but we all think that what we're thinking is like, I'm gonna do this thing because nobody's doing it. And it's like, no, everybody's doing a little bit of it. Yeah. So what's the best way to synthesize and to really, people always ask me, how do I start a nonprofit? You don't. You find a nonprofit who's doing kind of what you wanna do and you figure out how to collaborate, because you don't need two boards of directors doing overlapping things. And I feel like this is a place where we have a great opportunity to put our feelers out and say, like, who's doing stuff like this, and how do we really synthesize these ideas and move them forward in an egoless way that brings massage therapy to the place that I know we imagine it can be, and that many others imagine it can be, but just don't know how to get it there.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to Donaldo's point about being bold and humble. Mm-hmm. So we need the humbleness in this, and that it's not one organization or one person that waves a flag and says, look at me, I did so good, I pushed this forward.
Yeah,
I think we need a healthy dose of humble in that, and really focus on the value of the cause.
Yeah,
and collectively pull together to make some true difference, to actualize, you know, what we've been going around in the traffic circle about.
Right.
Since Donaldo's paper in 2006 that had some really great points about how we can do this. And I'm like, that's awesome information. Okay, I'm just going to carry on.
Totally.
Well, you know what might be, you know, might be sort of a positive reflection on that too, that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to your words. We do now have, and I thought about this when I was looking at your Healwell work. I thought about this. We do actually now have, however they are in silos, we have silos of excellence in subfields of the field of massage therapy.
Yes.
So oncology massage is one of those areas, just as an example. So if I think about, you know, Healwell and others that are doing oncology work, I would say, you know, we have silos of excellence in pain. Mm-hmm. Massage therapy and pain. You mentioned Nikki Monk, and so You know, talk about unsung excellent frameworks.
Truly. Right?
So Nikki has you know, done the heavy lifting on the utilization of some really complex frameworks, and we haven't picked that up. And I mentioned that in my dissertation, and in my defense that, you know, that it's hard slog and work. Don't get me wrong. The idea of crafting profession-specific frameworks, theories, and models is very effortful. But we do have some of that work. So I might offer: what if we think about this time that we try and break down some of those silos where there is excellence within the field? Mm-hmm. So when I started off after my master's thesis and into the doctoral work, I was interested in integrative oncology, and I actually pitched a proposal related to that topic, and then circumstances changed, and it was, in fact, you know, it seemed as though it was going to be a direction that was going to be too hard to pursue contextually here. You know, I was running up against some, you know, what I would call negative opinion leaders. And so I switched gears. I've gotten wily enough in my time to realize that, you know, don't be smashing your head on that door. Just go to another door that's open.
That's right.
So that's what I did. But I'm aware of the fact that there is excellence within that specific sub domain. So maybe that's what we need to be thinking about, because I don't know about the work that's going. I mean, I say I'm aware of it, but I'm only cursory aware of it. So maybe we need to be breaking down those silos. So I'm going to add my fourth point onto what we use this pause for.
Yeah.
We use this pause to look in for our own, you know, self-care and self-actualization and insight. And we look at integrating massage therapy into the system by looking at what the system needs. And then we also look at what we can take out of the dominant system to integrate into massage therapy. And we integrate with all the interprofessional care as well, and see how are other fields bringing humanity back into their care. Physicians are doing it. Nurses are doing it. Let's borrow some of those ideas. But I'm going to put that fourth point, that let's take this opportunity to study and read up on what domains that aren't necessarily our interest are doing and doing well. So what's going on in the world of fascial work that could inform my work in pain? What's going on in integrative oncology that could inform the musculoskeletal groups? I'm going to add that fourth idea.
Oh, thank you for saying the F word. That makes my day, of course. But no, I think that's so important. You know, one of the things that Nancy Keeney Smith and I did when we were writing our book was to really take a deep dive into the wound healing science. You know, not necessarily massage therapy science per se, but we really wanted to understand the process of wound healing, because our book is about scar tissue and how does problematic scar tissue develop. So in order to really understand how it develops and what my hands may or may not be able to do about it, we had to really understand the process of wound healing. So I think there are great ways that we can capitalize on this amazing work that's out there that we don't necessarily think as, say, massage therapy research per se, but it's so important to inform what we do clinically. So I think that's such a critical piece.
We were just putting together a series of six webinars about working with the pediatric population. And this morning we were just finalizing the slides around the neurological and autoimmune conditions. And, you know, we sort of walked through it and got done and went like, so? And I was like, no, see, we're falling into the trap of massage therapy says, so why does this matter to massage therapy? I'm not going to connect those dots for you. You will work with these patients differently because you now understand this condition. It's your job to decide how that matters to massage, but I'm not going to turn it into, you should know about Ehlers-Danlos because this is how it works for massage. Because part of evidence-based practice is, because I know about this condition, I'm going to work with people who are living with this, and I'm going to see what happens. And I'm going to write it down. And I'm going to try something else, and then I'm going to write that down. And, you know, I think we really have gotten into this mentality of spoon feeding, that if it's not about massage, it's not important to me. Yeah. And yeah, I think really broadening our perspective will be a big part of moving forward.
Well, and it speaks to the critical thinking piece. I think the spoon feeding in our profession has been one of our biggest downfalls.
Yeah.
Massage therapy programs here in Canada, for sure. So much information has to be, so much learning is jammed into a particular time frame. This information comes at us so fast.
Yeah.
So those people identified as the good teachers are the ones that just spoon feed the information, bullet points, here you go, here's the information, this is what you need to pass your registration exam. It's pushed at us so fast. So unfortunately, right from the get-go, we are raised in that kind of concept. So then when we get out into practice, it makes it that much more difficult for us to start to develop our critical thinking abilities. So yeah. I think the spoon feeding piece has been one of our biggest downfalls. And I think it ties into shortening the courses, because that makes more money for private schools because they don't have to pay instructors for as long period of time. I think there's a lot of things that tie into that. We'll get into that in this segment. But I think the spoon feeding piece is one of our, like, it's an exit that takes us off a very deep cliff.
Yeah. So, well, and as you said, you're left to develop the critical thinking.
Yeah.
It's not baked in.
No.
So now that's one of our potential exit points on our traffic circle. This is an opportunity for each of us to really have to engage in our own correlational thinking about our lives, about our careers, about keeping our families safe, about keeping ourselves well, about what we're going to do next. So this is an opportunity imposed upon us by this pandemic where it is not possible for others to think for us.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I'm absolutely optimistic that it's going to be an opportunity for us to devise some great insights on an individual basis and on a collective basis and go on to the next great adventure.
Yeah.
The next great adventure. I think that's a great way to close out this segment.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the only thing I would add to that, because of course I can't not add to that, is one of the things that occurred to me while you were both talking is that I think what we're really what we're doing, and this is going to sound hilarious because we've been talking about papers written as long ago as 2006 and even before that, but that this conversation, this podcast, this work is still appealing to what I would call the early adopters, you know, and I think there's been a hesitation around moving in this direction for some therapists because this isn't the way the profession is going, quote unquote. And the more that we can appeal to people who can see this as a direction to go in, the more critical mass we build and the more we move from that hump of early adopters to adoption. And I think that there's a real push within the profession to do that. I think there just needs to be that really bold, humble leadership to say, this is where we want to be anyway. You know, let's just go there. Let's get out of our own way and get off the exit.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. Well, I think, Donelda, we're going to have you back on. I'm sorry to tell you that, but you're going to have to spend some more time with us, I think. So,
It has been such a pleasure and something that I would be delighted to engage in anytime.
Excellent. So thank you all for joining us today on Massage Therapy Without Borders. I feel like we have done you a little bit of a disservice because last episode we promised you we would start with a pun. So we're going to end with a pun. And I'm just going to share with you that I really miss the days of being a massage therapist for deer. Just made me feel like $1 million. Right? So good. You're welcome.
Oh, nice.
So, on that note, please download us, share us, please write a review and let other people know why you listen, and stick with us. If you, if you're an early adopter and this conversation and issues like this feel important to you, we're going to dig in with all kinds of experts and people who won't let us call them experts, and send us your questions at info@heallwell.org. We'll look forward to hearing from you, and we hope you'll look forward to hearing from us. We'll talk with you soon. Thanks. Thanks so much, Donelda. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Massage Therapy Without Borders is produced by Healwell. Our theme music is by Harry Pickens. Send us feedback at info@healwell.org. That's info@heallwell.org. And please check out our classes at healwell.org. New episodes will be available weekly via your favorite podcast app and on Healwell's Facebook page. Thanks for listening.